Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross here with you. We're taking a look at the gap between the AFC and NFC. This is news. I mean, it's a new thing, relatively speaking. For the longest time, it felt like the NFC was really where the thick of the competition lied in the NFL. You knew that there were always going to be the bevy of the same kind of contenders. The Eagles, the Cowboys, they'd never really like actually get there, but they'd always be in the conversation. The Saints, the Seahawks, the Packers, the 49ers, the Rams, the Cardinals. I mean, all of these teams were always going to beat each other up. In the AFC, meanwhile, you were going to have the New England Patriots and then the Steelers. And more recently, the Kansas City Chiefs gap everyone else. And for the longest time, it was just the Patriots controlling that conference with the Broncos and Steelers kind of vying for that second seed. But what you've seen this year, Jake, has been a switch. Instead, you're seeing that the NFC right now, at the top of it, are the New Orleans Saints, although they've lost their starting quarterback for a couple weeks. Then you've got the Seattle Seahawks with the number 2 seed and the Packers with the number 3 seed. These three teams, I think, an outsider outside of Seattle, outside of Green Bay, outside of New Orleans, would question whether or not they could hang with even like the mid-tier teams in the AFC. Now, we in Seattle would make our case for why the Seahawks certainly could. But the reason it's a question is because now it seems like the competition is just stacked at the top of the AFC. Here's the overall standings in the NFL, Jake. You got the Pittsburgh Steelers, the only undefeated team left, 10-0. Right, number one. Kansas City Chiefs. New Orleans Saints are your first NFC team at 8-2. Then you got the Bills, the Browns, the Packers and the Seahawks are in there. Colts, Tennessee Titans are in there, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But just hovering at the top, you've got a lot of AFC teams. I mean, the top five, you've got one team, the New Orleans Saints, not in the AFC. So the question we're looking at right now is, A, what's contributed to this gap between the two leagues, or excuse me, the two conferences? And if you're the Seattle Seahawks, is not making it back to a championship for the first time since 2014 all the more disappointing because for the first time in what feels like the better part of a decade, it's wide open? This is the most wide open your conference has been in Russell Wilson's tenure.
You're absolutely right. This is an opportunity for the Seahawks that you can't let pass you by. And I think that's why it's been extremely frustrating to watch this defense play the way that they have been. And when you see this defense be historically bad through the majority of the season, it has left you feeling, man, they've got an unbelievable offense. They have a quarterback who is operating at a high level right now, and they're going to be held back yet again, and it's going to be because you have such a lopsided roster, and there was zero intention for there to be a lopsided roster. It just whatever happened, whether it was scheme, whether it was the guys just not buying into the system altogether. But either way, that's what it felt like. Now you're in a position now where you feel a little bit different about the Seahawks with the way that they played against the Cardinals. And this is their time. This is a prime opportunity for the Seahawks to really make their run. And they have to continue to keep building towards that. When you look at the AFC, to me, you have a lot more complete teams. The Steelers are a complete team. The Kansas City Chiefs are a complete team because they know exactly who they are. And they operate very well within the function of their construction. They know where they are, who they are, what they want to be, and they're fine with the way that their team is currently set up, even if their offense is the driving force, right? They have a franchise and a head coach that is wanting it to be that way, that is dedicated to that way. Whereas on the flip side, you have Pete Carroll, who has an offense that is wildly explosive. But that's not necessarily the design of the team. Pete Carroll wants to be more traditional, run the ball, play great defense, and he is coaching a different style of team than he's ever had in his coaching career. But Buffalo Bills, the Colts, typically, you know, as you looked at the AFC side of it, I think they are better defenses overall when you look at that side of the conference, whereas the NFC has really struggled to put together consistent games, even when you look at, you know, the very top of the conference. So it's an interesting year in terms of the NFL, because when we came into this, and maybe we had some NFC bias, Stacey, we thought that the NFC conference was going to be the conference that was going to be head and shoulders above the rest.
I absolutely did, because that's how it had been for so long. I mean, everyone was expecting the Chiefs to be the Super Bowl favorite, and right now they are still the Super Bowl favorite, despite the fact that the Steelers are undefeated. But another thing that Curtis questioned us with is, could the top teams in the NFC, could the Saints, the Packers, or the Seahawks hang with even the mid-tier teams in the AFC? And look at it this way. If the season ended today and the playoffs started tomorrow, the Baltimore Ravens, who housed last year's MVP, wouldn't even be in the playoffs. That's insane. Instead, you have the 7th-seed Raiders and then the 6th-seed Browns and the 5th-seed Titans as your wild card teams.
Yeah, that is crazy when you put it in that perspective, Stacey. Just hold off on the Cleveland Browns there. I'm not quite convinced that they will, you know, make the party when it's all said and done. But they've put themselves in a great position to do so. I think the Baltimore Ravens will end up catching them. But you're right. And you look at where this conference is, you're going to have what it looks like to be, you know, one team as it fits into the playoff scheme that has no business being in the playoffs. And you, and I'm talking to you, NFC East. I'm looking directly at you. The fact that one of those teams is going to be in the playoffs is just disgusting to me with the way that that conference is playing right now. But overall, I still think the top tier teams in the NFC on their best days can compete with the AFC, no question. I mean, look at the Buffalo Bills Seahawks matchup. The Buffalo Bills, I think, were the beneficiary of catching the Seahawks when they didn't have their two top running backs. Catching Russell Wilson with one of his worst performances of the season, and clearly this defense completely being out of sorts. So I think that when you talk about the Seattle Seahawks, if they're able to play to their capability, they can absolutely hang with the Buffalo Bills and should beat the Buffalo Bills. The Saints, Seahawks, Packers, and Bucks and Rams, to me, are five teams that I think if they played to their true capability, they could beat anybody in the AFC side of things, and I feel pretty confident in saying so.
I don't. You think that the Seahawks, with at full capacity, so the ceiling of this defense. The thing is, though, I'm not going to say the ceiling of the defense in theory. I'm going to say the defense, if it played like it did against the Cardinals, I don't think this team could beat the Chiefs. Now, do I think that in a Super Bowl, you couldn't have the ball bounce your way? No. Like, I don't think a Super Bowl win is out of the question just because the Seahawks aren't as good or as balanced a team as the Chiefs. But I do not think that the Seahawks could beat the Chiefs. Like, if they met tomorrow.
I understand that, but I also think that if, you know, you have a team like the Raiders who is able to give the Kansas City Chiefs problems. I know they're a division rival, and sometimes you have divisional opponents that just have your number. But you look at the way that the Raiders were able to play the Chiefs last night. The Seahawks absolutely are more than capable of doing that. Russell Wilson, I have more faith in Russell Wilson putting together a great performance against a Chiefs defense than I do Derek Carr. The Seahawks have a better running game than the Raiders do. And the question becomes, as you pointed out, would the defense be able to make enough plays versus the Kansas City Chiefs? We saw that matchup 2 years ago, and the Seahawks were clearly the inferior team, yet they won. Yet they beat the Chiefs that year because they showed up. They showed up. They played better defense than what they had shown all year. They still gave up 30-some points, but Russell Wilson, the offense, you know, were able to outscore Patrick Mahomes and you know, that offense. So I think they're more than capable of going toe-to-toe with the Chiefs.
Here's the problem. Number one, the Chiefs' defense is better this year than it has been in past years. I know that isn't always evident, especially when, weirdly enough, they've played the Raiders. The Raiders have just had their number. It's like they're Rams. For some reason, they just can't find a way to win, with the exception of last night. But what I worry about is that moment in last night's game when you have less than 2 minutes remaining, Patrick Mahomes has to go down the field and score. All of us are thinking it's going to happen. What all of us are wondering is, can the Raiders then respond? Because this is way too much time for Pat Mahomes to go down the field. Travis Kelce gets wide open in the end zone. How many of those moments would happen against this defense? That's my thing. I think I look at like what this defense was able to do against the Cardinals and think, yes, exactly. You have an all-pro linebacker. You have an all-pro safety. You have no excuse to be as bad as you have been through 10 weeks. At the same time, you haven't given me a lot of reason as someone covering this team who has no problem personally with any of these players to believe that you can do that. You know?
And I agree. I agree fully. I fully agree with you. And you look at the Raiders, they had, to me, that's where the game comes down to who's the last shooter with the ball. It's one of those games. And still, to me, I would love to be in that position where you have Russell Wilson against Patrick Mahomes. That's why I think that the Seahawks could still go toe-to-toe. Not every quarterback or every team in the league has a quarterback that can truly go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. Russell Wilson can, and that's going to give you a chance every single time. Yes, we know this defense isn't good, and could they make a play or two? I don't necessarily have the faith in that, but it has happened, you know, and we saw it 2 years ago, and Russell Wilson outdueled Mahomes. So it can happen again, and I would love to see that matchup in the Super Bowl. But to go to your point earlier, Stacey, this is an opportunity you can't let slip by if you're the Seattle Seahawks. That's why I said, you know, earlier today that these next 4 weeks – are vital. They are so important to your football team to build a championship caliber team, for your defense to not be the obvious weak link of your program, for your team to get healthier and to be more cohesive on the offensive side of the ball, Stacey. That's why when you talk about that matchup in particular, if they play tomorrow, do I feel confident? Not really. But could that change in 4 weeks? 4 weeks from now? Absolutely it can.
And that's a really important thing to know. And we're going to get back to that conversation at 1:30, that idea of what can you do in the next 4 weeks to build your championship team? You have a chance. Not only do you have a chance because of your record and because of your placement, your standing in the NFC West leading that division right now, but you have a chance because for the first time in a long time, that road to the Super Bowl, essentially, your road to the championship is a lot more wide open than it has been in years past. Before I get to this upcoming, there's a Monday night matchup with playoff implications. Did you have one more thing?
Yeah, I just wanted to play this cut here. I wanted to play cut number one, Tarek, if you could for us, please. This is Pete Carroll talking about how the Arizona Cardinal game could set the foundation for the rest of the season.
We took a step forward. We don't have to lose another game, you know. We don't have to give any games up. We can just, if we do it right, do it 1 week at a time, continue to hammer the football, everything will fit together. You know, we can throw the ball well whenever we need to, but the balance that creates for our football team and the attitude that it represents is where the championship comes from. And we have to see if we can exactly capture the mentality, the expectations, and those standards for, you know, this week. It's just this week, but I'm really excited about it. I hope our fans are too. We have a chance to, you know, do something here.
And to go along with that point, this is your opportunity. This is your opportunity to build a championship caliber roster. This is your opportunity to, you know, go on a tear down the stretch here and take every game seriously as you're building towards that championship run. And if they can do that and this defense can play together, they can play more cohesively, they can play off of each other, they can take ownership and accountability like they did Wednesday night in the hotel, and Ken Norton Jr. is having everybody stand up and give their assignments, and they're nailing their roles and responsibilities. If they can do that moving forward as they play these next couple games, I'm telling you, Stacey, this team, this confidence in this team will go up dramatically, and that's what you need in order to make a championship run, and that's what I'm looking forward to watching unfold here, starting with the Eagles on Monday night.
And you've also got playoff implications for two NFC teams tonight. The number 5 seeded Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 7-3, are going to be facing off against the number 6 seeded LA Rams, currently second in the NFC West. That'll be tonight for Monday Night Football. I'm sure all of us are going to be rooting for the Buccaneers in this instance. Although when we're talking, Jake, about NFC teams you're a little worried about facing, the Buccaneers, I guess the Buccaneers and the Rams, but the Buccaneers, one of those teams that they're not currently a team that I always think about, and they've had their moments where they've stumbled and where they've been a little inconsistent after a pretty strong series of weeks. So I know they have weaknesses, and you've seen those weaknesses exposed, but that's another team that I'm going to be rooting for them tonight. They're going to be my rooting interest because you don't want the Rams to go anywhere.
Oh, absolutely not.
But make no mistake, like I'm not really going to feel great if they have a dominant performance.
You talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I am absolutely talking about the Bucs.
Well, yeah, they're one of those teams, too, that you look at and think that they have a roster that is capable of doing a whole lot, right? They have a roster that offensively they have a ton of weapons across the board. Their tight end group, the receiver group, the running back group is extremely deep. And their defense, they are a feast or famine type of defense. And they are a group that can really get after the quarterback and can play great when they're at the top of their game. And so that's definitely a team that you have to look out for. But it, with all things being considered, I'd rather worry about Tampa Bay later and see the Rams lose now, because that is going to be the best thing for the Seahawks when it comes to potentially winning this division.
Let's get to NFL headlines. All right, going to get started with the news of top pick Joe Burrow suffering a torn ACL in that game this weekend. Now, an MRI, this is according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, an MRI has since revealed more damage than anticipated. Burrow tore his ACL, also his MCL, and suffered additional structural issues in his knee, per Ben Baby of ESPN and also Schefter. So they didn't specify what that other structural issue were. We don't know if it's like a meniscus. You don't know if it's a chip or a bone issue. You have no idea what it is. But this is the worst case scenario for the Bengals. One of the things that they had been criticized for all year, Jake, was their inability to protect Burrow. And it felt like something where everyone knew this is something that could be coming and had been warning about it, but when it happened, your heart still broke because you were hoping this wouldn't be the case.
Absolutely. I mean, when you have your first overall pick,
yeah,
to be more specific, who has been playing really good football. He's been a great leader for you. He's been everything that you hoped that he would be for a struggling franchise. You finally found a quarterback that you feel like you can really build around. And now you just were hoping that he could get through the season healthy so that they could go back to the drawing board and continue to keep building in the right way. And now you have Joe Burrow, who isn't just dealing with an ACL tear. He's dealing with everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, he totally ripped up his knee. It's really a sad deal. And you know, Joe Burrow, I know he tweeted out later that night that he was going to be back next season. I don't know if he will be. I mean, this is that dramatic of an injury where Joe Burrow might miss the entire 2021 season, which puts back your franchise and your plans back an entire year. And I don't know if Zach Taylor has that kind of commitment to him from the organization. So a lot can change in that time frame. And I just feel for Joe Burrow because, as I said before, he was really playing good football, and he looked like he was the perfect leader for that franchise. I think his career is not over, but it's definitely going to be delayed.
Absolutely agree. And it was, I don't want to say heartwarming, it was encouraging to see benches clear for people to come out and kind of wish him well as he was being carted off the field. He's clearly a player that is well-respected, not just in his own locker room, but by guys that have played on the other side of the ball. And Chase Young obviously knows him personally, having played with him before. So those are relationships that already exist. But he is a guy that you feel comfortable about his future in Cincinnati. I don't love hearing that, though, because it does make you worried about his future this upcoming year. How about this, too, Jake? Bleacher Report tweeting that now, in addition to Joe Burrow, these are the number of stars that have suffered a torn ACL this year that they'll have to be battling back from in 2021. So it makes you wonder whether any of these stars could be gone for this upcoming season. You've got Burrow, Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham Jr., Nick Bosa, Devin Bush, Cortland Sutton, Taylor Lewan, Bruce Irvin, of course. I mean, these are a number of guys that, and that's not certainly not all of them, that have suffered serious injuries this year. And you kind of, I certainly haven't forgotten about a guy like Nick Bosa, but there have just been an insane number of superstars that have been injured this year. And now you're starting to wonder, as it gets later in the season, what the beginning of next season is going to look like without some of these guys. Are you going to have Barkley? Are you going to have Beckham Jr.? Are you going to have Bosa? Are you going to have Burrow? Wow, it's a lot of B names.
Well, it is. Well, the likelihood
it's
is
not intentional.
No. Barkley has a chance because of when it happened. It happened early enough in the season where he could potentially be back from that injury. But everybody else, no. I mean, you're talking about when are they going to come back? Is it going to be in the middle of the season or at all? We're talking about Rashad Penny. Rashad Penny, he tore his ACL in December, and you know we're still trying to get him back in this season. So it's a very difficult injury to come back from. I know there's been a lot of miraculous recoveries that we've seen from ACL injuries from athletes as of late. The science and the surgeries have gotten a lot better, but it's still a difficult injury to come back from, and it will be unfortunate to not see those guys be able to start next year, but we all knew that this was going to be a challenge this year. Not just with handling COVID and the pandemic and the testing and all that, but how was this going to handle? How are the players physically going to be able to handle a serious lack of preparation to get their bodies right and to get them fully geared up to play the season? I think you see some of the repercussions of that.
The Seattle Seahawks got some help in the form of an Indianapolis Colts win over the Green Bay Packers. That game, though, went all the way into overtime. Aaron Rodgers driving down the field for the Packers, and then you had a fumble on the second play by Marquez Valdez-Scantling. The Indianapolis Colts recover and have a game-winning field goal just moments after that. Since then, you guys, Valdez-Scantling tweeted about receiving death threats, essentially, over this game. Are you kidding me? Like, look, no one wants this. And I understand that there are players that sometimes feel frustrating because you're like, he can be so electrifying and then also make a mistake. But nothing a player does is worth sending any kind of threat. Also, you guys, you're still 7-3. You're still hanging on to that number 2, number 3 seed in the NFC. It's going to be a battle, you know, between them and Seattle to see who can take that, or whether or not the Saints are going to drop one and fall into that conversation too. But just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah,
absolutely absurd. And that's, you know, that's fans taking it to another level that I just never understand that. I never understand, you know, people taking it to that level. But also, those people aren't necessarily stable people to begin with. So it's unfortunate that he's feeling that type of hate. But, you know, sometimes not that to that level, but it just kind of comes with the territory. And you just got to, you know, cancel all that noise out and, you know, just focus on the next week and being at your best.
Now, you also have some Seahawks roster moves. So Snacks Harrison has once again been activated to the active roster from the practice squad. You had Greg Olsen placed on the injured reserve. It hasn't been clear that he's done for the season, but he's certainly going to be out with a chance to come back maybe in the postseason, though I think most people are anticipating that might be a stretch. Still, though, hope there for him. He's on the IR now, though. And then listen to this, Jake. Running back Bo Scarborough, who suffered a hamstring injury, placed on the injured reserve. Tight end Stephon Sullivan, who had been working as a defensive end, placed on the injured reserve. Scarborough had made his debut against the Cardinals with Seattle. Sullivan made his NFL debut as a defensive end, weirdly enough. He played one game against the 49ers, now has been placed on the injured reserve. That last move, by the way, is just adding some center depth with Brad Lundblad to the practice squad. So not something to really track yet. They needed some depth there with Fuller injured and with Posick missing a couple games, so that's a move for that. But the one that surprises me maybe the most is Stephon Sullivan, your rookie, ending up on injured reserve. I completely missed when he was injured.
Well, that is, when you talk about, you know, some of those injuries, Stacey, Stacey, could you repeat that last part? You kind of cut out there.
Oh, sorry.
I was gonna try and and make up for the part where I didn't hear, but I just figured I'd
No. Okay, so Seahawks made a couple roster moves. You have Snacks Harrison coming back to the active roster for this game, something we were all expecting to happen. And then you have a couple players, three players placed on IR. Tight end Greg Olsen, running back Bo Scarborough, so your running back depth takes another hit there. And then rookie tight end Stephon Sullivan also ends up on the injured reserve list.
That one surprises me, but part of it also makes me wonder, Stacey, is, you know, sometimes you make some of these moves where they're on the cusp where you could have kept them around, but it's better to move them to IR now that you need some of that flexibility on the roster. So, you know, I'm not too concerned about Stephon Sullivan here, but I see this as more of the Seahawks taking advantage of the ability to work the roster as much as possible to be able to give them the people that they need. And and I'm curious to see eventually when Rashad Penny does come back, when Carson is fully healthy, what's going to happen to some of those guys that are on the running back depth chart in terms of practice squad with Bo Scarborough and Alex Collins, and what ends up happening to someone like Travis Homer or DJ Dallas. I mean, that would be, you know, you've got all of a sudden your running back room just becomes extremely crowded.
Now let's talk about something I was not expecting this weekend, which was Taysom Hill to play like he did. It was an interesting quarterback conversation between Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill. They'd invested in Hill, but Winston had the career experience as a quarterback, Hill being the guy people constantly pointed to and said, look, he's one of the best athletes you have, but is he the best quarterback in that room? If nothing else, he proved he's certainly worthy of getting the start there with a great performance for the Saints. The Saints hanging on to that top seed in the NFC, Jake. So it's something to keep an eye on for sure there. Coming up next, we're going to get back to how important these next 4 weeks are for the Seahawks. This is Jake and Stacy.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
A little bit of a mini bye week again for the Seahawks before a stretch of, let's call them, must-win games. Let's say you need to stack these in the win column because you have no excuse not to against these opponents. November 30th is your first game back. It's at Eagles, and then you got three back-to-back-to-back home games against the Giants, the Jets, and Washington. Jake, when you're looking ahead at the next 4 weeks, what did the Seahawks not just have a chance to do but need to do?
What they need to do is they need to be able to use these next 4 weeks. I think that what they were able to do last Thursday was they were able to hit a turning point. They were able to stop the bleeding, so to speak, in terms of how poorly they were playing defensively and offensively, getting into a style that was really starting to hurt their team. And I know I'm not talking about let Russ cook and the attempts, but in which turnover football was becoming all too apparent. And you can't win games when you're losing the turnover battle, especially with a defense who has been struggling. And Russell being able to hit the reset button, you get Carlos Hyde back, who is able to start playing downhill, and you're able to get that aspect of your game back. I think that part of it to me was huge in seeing them hit that turning point and them being able to get back on track offensively and them also being able to turn the corner potentially defensively. Now you have the next 4 weeks laid out in front of them, Stacy, where they are going to be playing against the Eagles, the Giants, the Jets, and the Washington football team. Mm-hmm. After that, they play the Los Angeles Rams, who got the best of them. To me, I have that particular game circled over and over again in big red marker. That's the game that will determine a lot for you this season in terms of playoff seeding, in terms of the NFC West title, in terms of is this team a true contender or not. But in order for them to build themselves into a true championship caliber team, the next 4 weeks are going to be vital. And I'm not talking about them offensively. I'm talking about them defensively. This is a chance to build upon what they did Thursday night and for them to play cohesively through four games and really build that confidence on that side of the ball. Because if they can do that, Stacy, and become a more complete team and use these next 4 weeks, not in terms of taking things for granted, but essentially playing four really struggling offenses as a somewhat of a preseason that you didn't have to get themselves better, I've always said that the ceiling for the Seahawks is higher than any team, and it's because of how poor the defense has played. If they can manage that, to me, that's going to be the most important thing for the Seahawks over the next 4 weeks is, are they building themselves into a championship-caliber football team?
Here's my question, though, Jake, and this isn't knocking your point because I agree with it, but what can you really prove? How do you prove you're a contender against four teams that are bad, objectively bad teams? I mean, yeah. The outside world's going to be looking in, you know what I mean? And they're going to say, like, okay, cool, congratulations, Seahawks, on going 4-0. Let's hope you go 4-0 and don't drop one of these games. Congratulations on going 4-0 against a stretch of awful teams that have no shot at the playoffs, with the exception of the Eagles, who somehow are going to fall backwards into it.
Correct. They wouldn't be wrong. Because, again, as I said, the game that's going to prove all of that, whether you were able to come together and actually build something, is going to be that Rams game towards the end of the year. And that is going to be your opportunity to show that you were building something. So in the meantime, not everybody's going to be smiling and say, yeah, that's cute. You beat the Eagles, you beat the Giants and the Jets and the Washington football team. But what it does, Stacey, is confidence is everything. Trust is everything. And when you're able to have kind of a monumental moment for your program, like the Arizona Cardinals game potentially is, and that's the way Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. And a lot of the guys on the defensive side of the ball are thinking that game was, if you continue to keep playing with consistency and show consistent, good defensive football, that's going to make your unit better. That's going to bring legitimate results. It doesn't matter who you're playing. Confidence and trust outweigh everything else. And right now, through the majority of the season, what have they looked like? They have looked broken. They have looked dysfunctional. They have looked like they have not been on the same page whatsoever, and that there is a serious lack of trust because no one's doing their job the way that they should be. And that, to me, Stacey, more than anything, regardless of the opponent, who they're playing, what their record is, that's what I want to see from that defense, and that's something that they can build and really turn themselves into a team that can be a legit competitor.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Jake Heap, Stacey Ross here with you, talking about the importance of the next 4 weeks for the Seahawks. Jake saying it's a chance for this team to finally get the preseason they never had, get that communication right, build their championship roster, and let's be honest, that focus is on the defense. We sum it up next.
The wait is over.
They're going to wait a minute.
It's time to sum it up with Jake and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back!
Before I forget to tell you guys, we have good news. The Professor John Clayton continues on 710 ESPN Seattle. Catch his daily hits with Danny and Gallant each morning at 7:15 and Wyman and Bob every afternoon at 4. You can also continue to follow John's work online at 710sports.com. Jake Heap, Stacey Ross here with you right now. Let's get back to some important sound from Pete Carroll, Jake. Let's go to cut number one. This is Carroll talking about how the Arizona Cardinals game sets a foundation for the rest of the season.
We took a step forward. We don't have to lose another game, you know. We don't have to give any games up. We can just, if we do it right, do it 1 week at a time, continue to hammer the football, everything will fit together. You know, we can throw the ball well whenever we need to, but the balance that creates for our football team and the attitude that it represents is where the championship comes from. And we have to see if we can exactly capture the mentality, the expectations, and those standards for, you know, this week. It's just this week, but I'm really excited about it. I hope our fans are too. We have a chance to, you know, do something here.
See, Jake, I thought I heard one thing because Carroll speaks in abstracts a lot, so sometimes you can't tell what's coach speak and what is him actually saying something he believes. That's not a dig.
Yeah.
He's just very careful not to ever say anything he doesn't want you to know. But what did you hear when you heard this? Because I've since changed my mind.
Well, one of the things that was interesting listening back to that for a second time is Pete Carroll talking about the physical nature of their team, talking about... Didn't you get a sense that he thought that this running game was going to be the key to them becoming a championship caliber team?
Yes.
I hear that, and I wonder how you can look at the running game being the central focus of this turning your team into a championship caliber team and not necessarily the defense. And maybe this was a part of the question that he was asked that he was just simply answering. But for Pete Carroll, I think in his philosophy, he believes that setting a physical tone with the running game allows you to basically play the role of the bully. You don't become a team that is soft, that is finesse, that is one that is one-dimensional. And for Pete Carroll, he would rather have a great physical running attack than an explosive passing attack, because he believes that it's playoff caliber football. The difference is do you have a defense that allows you to play playoff caliber football along with that running game? And the answer is TBD right now, and it doesn't look good. And it's interesting to hear that when this offense has been so explosive. It's been one of the league's best, led by one of the best quarterbacks in the league, who went through a tough stretch because he didn't have his top two running backs and because he was making poor decisions, more so than it was necessarily the structure of their offense. So I'm curious to see how that will manifest itself over the next couple of weeks, Stacey.
Yeah, I think that the reason I think Carol thinks what I'm about to say is because I know that Mike and Brock have both had this conversation. I think Carol believes that having a physical approach on one side of the ball has this kind of transitive effect where if you want to be a physical defense, you must also be a physical offense. And I wonder if he feels like this injecting this physical run game into the game against the Cardinals also helped the defense, whether it's a mentality, whether it's the way you deflate the opposing offense, whatever it is. I don't necessarily believe that. I think you can have the kind of offense the Seahawks had in weeks 1 through 7 or so before they lost a couple players, running backs due to injury, and also have a great defense. I don't think that the Seahawks' struggles on defense were because they didn't have a run game or because they weren't super physical on offense. I think that they were making the same mistakes over and over on defense. And there were some problems with mm-hmm. whether it's coaching, execution, health, chemistry, whatever it was. I don't think it had anything to do with offense. Now we're getting into a philosophical conversation, right? Because there are people that know plenty about sports, Brock Huard, Mike Salk, who do think that it does have kind of a correlation. I think Pete Carroll is one of those people. So when he says sets the foundation, I think that I think it might mean a change in offensive philosophy too. And I wonder if you're not going to see the let Russ Cook movement as much.
I think it would be a real shame, to be honest with you. And don't construe what I'm saying. I think it's very easy because it's such a polar conversation. You're either let Russ Cook right. or you're, hey, no, we got to pound the rock. You know, the text from the 253 on the Busy Heart Seltzer text line, pound the rock, Jake. Don't fight it, baby. I'm not fighting it. But what I'm saying is you don't need to go one side or the other. The beauty of this offense is that you have the ability to continue to stay aggressive, put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands, and trust him to make the right decisions, particularly on first and second down. Be the aggressor. Play with great tempo. Do all the things that you were doing on offense. Now, as you lost your two running backs with Carson and Hyde, you lost that punch to your offense. You lost that physical nature to your offense. And so to me, getting those guys back is a complementary piece. And I said it last week on Friday, but there were often times I loved it where they were in position to call a pass play. Russell Wilson looks at the front, looks at everything that's in front of him, and checks it into a run play and checks it into a play where, you know, Carson is able to get himself downhill and attack the defense and keep them on their heels. And that is the beauty, is that they can do both things at an extremely high level because they have legitimate weapons on the outside with their receivers and Tyler Lockett and DK and Russell. And they have legitimate weapons in the running game with Hyde and Carson. And that, to me, is what rounds that offense out. So I don't want to see Pete Carroll shrink or limit this offense because of the need to want to have a physical running game and quote-unquote balance. What I'm hoping for is that balance, that word balance, becomes efficiency. That's what we want. We want efficiency in both the passing game and the running game. Highly effective. And it doesn't matter to me what holds more or what attempts you have more of. More pass attempts, more run attempts. As long as both are working together in sync and as long as both are being highly effective, that's where you're able to be adaptable from week to week, leaning on your quarterback. When push comes to shove, lean on your quarterback, not your run game. And I guess that's where my cautionary tale is for this team, because we've seen it many times. The last two playoffs, in fact, 2 years ago, Dallas Cowboys, they leaned way too much on the run and didn't give Russell Wilson the ball early enough. The Green Bay Packers game, you tried to run the ball with a bunch of backup running backs. Marshawn Lynch, as much as we love Marshawn Lynch, coming coming from off the couch and trying to pound the rock with him instead of just giving the offense to Russell Wilson earlier in the game. So that to me is where it needs to mesh well, and not let egos or not let philosophy get in the way. Be adaptable week to week.
See, here's the more important question, though, Jake. You don't want that to be the case. Neither do I. I agree with you there. But is Carroll going to do that? What I might want and what Carroll might want are two different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think Carroll's going to put a lid on it?
I don't think so. Not at this stage. And to me, when I watch the Arizona Cardinals game on Thursday, it ended up working out that way. They ended up having great success with the running game, and you saw Russell Wilson be very decisive with his dropbacks. If he didn't have anything, he tucked it and ran. He had 10 carries, Stacey, and all of them were from scrambles, from pass plays. So I still think that they're going to give Russell Wilson plenty of opportunities. You take away the DK Metcalf drop in the end zone. Take away his other drop on that over route. You take away the holding call on Damian Lewis. I mean, Russell's thrown for near 300 yards and three touchdowns. Maybe he has a fourth because that sluggo leads to another successful drive. So again, don't go so far back to take away what got you there in the first place, and that was that aggressive nature on offense. Be in attack mode. Don't be in conservative mode waiting to the fourth quarter to win the game, because your offense and your quarterback and everybody else is good enough to do that.
Now, we've been talking about the offense. I'm going to take us off the rails a little bit here, Jake, because we're wrapping up, and you guys are going to hear from Wyman and Bob coming up next. Before we do, though, we do have some breaking news. I want you to tell me whether or not you're disappointed by this. I know what the answer is, but I want you to tell Seahawks fans what your answer is, okay? Because I know we're going to get questions. The Raiders have signed former Falcons and Titans outside linebacker Vic Beasley to their practice squad. Should Seahawks fans be disappointed they didn't get a shot at him?
No. No, they should not be disappointed, because they did have a shot at him. They could have tried to bring him in anytime they wanted. They chose not to. So I'm not bummed out by that. And hey, who knows? Our guy, our guy, Tack McKinley, he could fail a couple other.
You never know.
Fail a couple other physicals and make his way down the waiver wire. Who knows?
Oh,
but
God.
Right now, I do believe that they have the group that they want, that they feel comfortable with, and hopefully they can continue to keep building, Stacey, on what they've done. Gotta love what they did versus the Arizona Cardinals. Can they sustain it?
All right. We got a fun week for you guys. I know it's Thanksgiving week, but we still have plenty of fun stuff planned for previewing this upcoming Monday night game between the Seahawks and Eagles. That includes, as a heads up, a Wednesday edition of The Huddle. So don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob is next. This has been Jake and Stacey.